Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on-demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by my co-host Matt Fortuna and today's guest, Ryan Harris. You know him as a former Notre Dame offensive lineman, four-year starter, Super Bowl champion, play-by-play analyst for the Notre Dame Broadcast Network. Ryan, thanks for being with us. It's been a minute. And I guess, look, we all want to talk offensive line. That's been sort of one of the weirdest stories of the year, but I have to give you credit for something you said in the press box at Florida State. You came over to me and said, hey, I watched some practice clips, got sent to me. Isaiah Foskey is going to have a freaking monster year. Just like, look out. And I'm like, all right, because the practices that we went to, he was just sort of okay. You didn't really see what's happened coming. So I want to know what you saw on that practice tape and then what's it been like watching him play. You can appreciate a very, very athletic defensive end more than most.
Well, what I saw with Isaiah Foskey and what I've continued to see all season has been his ability to use his power with leverage. And that's what's rare in the college football game. You get a lot of guys who are powerful, you know, weight room strong, but they can't bend to actually use that against the opponent. Isaiah Foskey is fantastic with his strength and he uses his hands. For the life of me, guys, I don't know what keeps defensive linemen from doing every single martial arts class they can possibly do. It's all about hand-to-hand combat, as they say. I mean, I interviewed Jerry Tillery the other day, and he said it's all about the hands. I mean, so somehow Isaiah Foskey got that message. And whether it's the fact that he's got an opportunity now to leave for the NFL after this season or the fact that he just has, you know, the ability through his strength to dominate, I mean, he was lining up at linebacker, defensive end. And I also know, too, when you're the most dominant physical player on your college team, you don't want to hurt your teammates. And that's ultimately what Isaiah Foskey can do. He's going against the backup offensive line. And if he's going to start putting people in the ground, thank God he didn't, right? Because you needed your backup offensive lineman. So I could tell that. When it was a situational football, when they were working on those situations that have been important this season, he was just giving all-out effort with strength and leverage and using his hands.
Ryan, I believe this is your fourth season now doing the radio work for your alma mater. Easily the most unpredictable of the four seasons and probably the hardest to prepare for game in and game out. What's that preparation like and how much more difficult or more challenging has it been this year where – week to week, you just don't know who's going to start where in many places.
Well, first you got to bring your aspirin, right? I mean, it's like heart attack city here trying to come. And, you know, perhaps I need to care less, but I do love Notre Dame football. And, you know, that's the challenge that I enjoy. I love watching film. I love, you know, the fact that, yes, there's been quarterback, you know, inconsistency in terms of who's going to start, who's not. And at the same time, Jack Cohn's been the guy, right? So it's one of those things where, you know, it's almost like you get two different pictures of the same piece of art, right? This Notre Dame season, it was going to be tough either way with three new linemen coming into play, including one freshman and Blake Fisher. And then you lose one offensive lineman and two offensive linemen and three. I mean, that's a lot to overcome. So I've looked forward to the challenge. And to be honest, to me, the MVP of the season has been Kyren Williams. I mean, he has been huge in big moments. I mean, I love how Kevin Austin's developed. I'm looking forward to the continued dominance of Lorenzo Styles. But I think that especially against USC, Kyren Williams, that was the cherry on top. He has been the driving force for success to keep defenses balanced and also making plays that really aren't there. So it's fun to see him kind of get his open areas.
We could probably talk about the offensive line situation for an hour and a half. But what did you make of the way that group started the season? And then what do you make of the last 2 weeks?
Well, even at the beginning of the season, you could see the spots where they came together, the final drive against Toledo, you know, the final drive against Florida State. So there was enough of dominance there to say, oh, they just need time together. I mean, you guys have been doing this podcast. I guarantee you your first three shows were a lot different than your shows now, right? But it's amazing how when it's offensive linemen, people are like, oh, you're supposed to just work with new coworkers and be excellent just like that. You know, it's just not realistic, right? So my experience as an offensive lineman, it takes five games to get used to what that player is going to say, how that player is going to come off of a block. I mean, you and I, Pete, might come off of to get to a linebacker completely differently. I might hold off a little longer to make that linebacker declare. You might get up there to prevent that linebacker from gaining speed. You know, it depends on who you are as a player. So you got to learn and really literally feel out your teammate when it comes to offensive line play. And that's why it's no surprise the last 2 weeks have been better. They know each other. Joe Ault knows that he's going to play left tackle because I don't think he knew he was going to play at all this year. And then all of a sudden he was playing in some of the biggest games for Notre Dame. So it takes time with all great things. And the offensive line is just the latest example of that.
Right, in that same vein, I mean, yeah, I think we all forget Blake Fisher goes down in week one, and that was a guy who had just impressed everyone he came across since he enrolled in campus. You've played in that program. Can you just speak to, like, what a accomplishment and how difficult it is to be a day one true freshman starting left tackle?
Well, I mean, I think Blake Fisher's got incredible talent, size, speed, agility. And I thought it was telling, too, when Coach Kelly was asked if he had a better lineman, he's like, well, Ronnie Stanley is bigger. That's only the highest paid left tackle in the NFL, right? I mean, come on, man. It's like asking, hey, how's your kid at baseball? Well, you know, Don Mattingly wasn't too bad at this age either. I mean, if that's the comparison, right, you know, that says a lot. But it really speaks to a level of belief. To play as a freshman, to start as a freshman, you have to have belief months before other people. And that's something that Blake Fisher had in addition to his talents. And it's quite something. I mean, those are rare experiences in life when we're waiting for everybody to catch up to what we know about ourselves, right? And so it's always fun to see that. And it was just unfortunate Blake Fisher had that injury, and hopefully he comes back better than ever with you know, a lot more confidence because of how he played in that first half against Florida State.
I'm interested in something that Brian Kelly has mentioned a couple times in the last couple weeks when I've asked him about the run game and some of the progress Jared Patterson has made. Like, I think Jared Patterson is like an NFL level prospect, but really wasn't playing like one for the first month of the season. And Kelly talked about, like, essentially Patterson was trying to do other people's jobs because there wasn't trust in, like, what was happening at the guard spot. Like, can you explain what you saw from Patterson in the first few weeks? And then, like, how that trust gets built other than just reps? And plays where that shows. To me, it was like the Kyron Williams 38-yard run where he's working with Kristoffic, combination block, then boom, goes to the second level. Like, where do you see that progress the most in terms of plays?
Well, I think every leader realizes at some point you have to let those who you're leading fail. And I'm with Coach Kelly there. I mean, even something as little as, hey, I'm on a block front side, but I see that guy's beating you. I'm going to stab my hand back to stop him so you can catch up. But, oh, by the way, that lets the linebacker I'm supposed to go to shoot the gap, you know. So just – and when you're dealing with offensive line, one step – I mean, I've heard guys multiple times get just reamed out for having a step that's 6 inches off, right? I mean, we're talking about just this far off from just, you know, one side or the other. So anytime you stop to help a teammate that's not your responsibility, you're really ruining – you're ruining the chemistry and the fluidity of the offensive line. And I think, I mean, I haven't talked to Jarrett Patterson, but you're absolutely right. He's an NFL offensive lineman. But Jarrett Patterson, I think, learned, hey, you know what? We're going to let Kane Madden fail so that he can learn that he's got to pick it up. You know, I'm going to let Andrew Kristoffic fail so that he can learn to pick it up. Zeke Correll. So those are the kinds of things that failure is often our greatest teacher. And as leaders, we often want to prevent failure because we think it's, you know, reflects badly on us. But you need failure to be great. And that's the truth that we all know deep down.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
In that same vein, Ryan, I mean, whether it's high school, your Notre Dame career, your NFL career, how does that get coached up in season when you are feeling and when the media and the fans are all over you and they think, obviously, that's the backbone of every team. How do you get better internally as a group, and what are some of the coaching points that some of your biggest mentors have utilized to get the most out of you guys?
Well, you know, great coaches find out what each individual needs. You know, I wasn't a guy who, if you were going to scream and yell at me, man, I'm screaming and yelling right back at you. And if you're going to do that, you know, I'm getting up in your face. And that's not a constructive conversation, right? So I was a guy who you had to say, hey, what were you thinking here? And then, hey, you know, I was thinking this, I was wrong there. I need to do that. Good. Now you know that, you know, other guys need to get yelled at. Some people need to feel embarrassed. So it really depends on the coach, the level in which that they're willing to learn which player, how they react to different information. So that's something big. But also, I hate to break your guys' feelings. Offensive, the players in college aren't listening to every podcast and reading every article, okay? It's not like they know the world. You know what they know? That they had lost a game, you know? Go talk to Clemson, right? Go talk to Texas A&M. Go talk to Penn State. I mean, there are teams who are way worse, so – you know, every season there are going to be reporters doing their job, and that can't take away from your belief. I mean, the year we won the Super Bowl, people thought we couldn't run the football and that we weren't going to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, Peyton Manning wasn't the guy anymore. Well, it turns out we ran the football, set a record for an undrafted, you know, running back in the Super Bowl. And, oh, by the way, Peyton Manning won his second and final Super Bowl. So oftentimes you guys have a job to do. We guys and gals have a job to do in the media. And if we were going to put percentages, performance percentages on what we're right or wrong, you want to PFF your guys' columns? I didn't think so, right? So let the guys, give them some time. And let's not forget, you know, you had one loss with three turnovers in the first five possessions against the number two team in the country. That ain't that bad, you know, and considering the opportunities you had, you still have an opportunity to get in the college football playoffs.
When are you getting on the Manning cast before Pete goes? I got to ask you that.
Hey, man, there's been now another offensive lineman on there. Unbelievable. You know, you got two quarterbacks and sometimes three and not a single offensive lineman. But I was fortunate. Peyton invited me to his Hall of Fame celebration. And so I can't complain. I can't complain after being invited to that.
Well, I appreciate using the pronoun we with the media since you're yes. You're in it now.
Yes, it's an adjustment still for me. I'm still learning.
Much respect for that. I was interested how you saw the quarterback position develop this year because, I mean, we were texting during the season. I think going into Virginia Tech, you and I were both really surprised that it was still Jack Cohn after the last – well, and then at halftime of Virginia Tech, they were like, well, this is why I was surprised. Over the last four quarters plus 4 minutes, why it was Jack Cohn the whole time, I think, has sort of been a little bit more apparent. Like, what do you make of the way that he's performed? And how do you go from how he looked against Cincinnati and the first three series against Virginia Tech to how he's looked over the last game plus the end of Virginia Tech?
Well, there's no question the competition has pushed him to new heights. Right. I mean, Jack Cohn's been a different player since Drew Pine came in, Tyler Buckner's come in and played. And competition makes us all better. Right. I mean, that's why there's two of you on this podcast. Right. Because it was just one. You probably get a little lazy with the questions and the recording times and things like that. But when there's two, it's like, oh, I got to be on my game. Otherwise, you know, so competition makes us great. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't know, you know, just from talking to coaches and players. I don't think anybody saw Tyler Buckner making the leap that he made. I know that they thought maybe a red zone package here or there. But what I love about Tyler Buckner is that he throws with anticipation. And one of the things when you're in a competition with somebody at your same position, you start seeing the same play and you see what you would do and how somebody does it differently. And sometimes that differently is better. So what I think is Jack Cohn benefited from his stability, his calm demeanor that he always has that helps the guys in the huddle. But he's also benefited from, well, I didn't think that throw was open, but Drew Pine made it. Tyler Buchner made it. Well, that means that I can make it too. So I'm going to make that throw. You know, I look at that Kevin Austin reception. I think that was towards the end of the third or early fourth quarter last week against USC. And those are the kinds of plays that weren't there before the competition. So I love that Jack Cohn's been steady Eddie, and I love that he's found an edge, especially with that up-tempo play.
The truth of the matter, Ryan, is I've just been trying to find a podcast partner or guest who has hair, but I've struck out with both of you so far today.
Never give up. Never give up.
How often are you in South Bend in season? Are you at practices? Are you getting practice film? What's kind of like your Monday through Friday routine ahead of game day?
Well, I like to have the hay in the barn, as Peyton Manning always said, before I leave for campus. By the time I get on that flight Friday, you know, I've got the information. I've watched the film. You know, that's one of my favorite things to do, watch film. So I've got an idea of how I would attack the team, what I anticipate, things like that. And then, reading the game notes. But I get there Friday. Sometimes if I can, I'll catch practice. It's just fun to see some of those guys just having fun on those loose Friday practices, you know. Talk to some of the coaches. You know, I love Ron Paulus. He and I talk a little bit. So it's good to get in there. But, you know, I love getting to the game, walking around the field before the game just to get a sense of the atmosphere, you know, and get a sense of how the players look, you know, physically. I mean, somebody like Jordan Botello. Right. He looks like just a linebacker. And then you stand next to him. You're like, oh, my God, who is that monster? You know, so I love getting on the field real quick and then getting upstairs and getting ready to have some fun calling the game.
Well, I mean, speaking of picking up the atmosphere, you played in a Notre Dame stadium without night games, without video boards, without LED light shows. what did you make of that? I mean, that was definitely taking this place to sort of a different level.
So awesome. It was so – where are the video board people now, by the way? Where are the anti-video board people? Are they still anti-video board?
Just like the Wrigley Field people. Yeah, you win and it goes away.
I just for the life of me, and especially for recruiting, right? I mean, yeah. I remember when I was playing, Purdue had that big board, you know, and I'm like, man, and they were – oh, you know, Pete Sampson with the tackle. Ah, yeah. They got a Pete Sampson.
I remember that one.
You know, that's cool. Yes. That's cool. You know, so I don't know what they thought a video board would take away from the Notre Dame experience. It has added to it. I really love, too, how they've used it to highlight some of the work that the faculty at Notre Dame are doing and some of the students. It's a fantastic atmosphere. And I think, you know, a lot of the Notre Dame, people who decide what that game day experience looks like, they were at Georgia a few years ago when the lights went off and stuff like that. And that was an experience I've never been a part of, you know, and I won a Super Bowl. So you can create that kind of fun and those moments, and you want something unique to your stadium and the video board, the LED lights. I mean, I remember when there were bulb lights, you know what I'm saying? So it's fun to see the advancement, not only in the game of football, but also in the game day experience.
You talk about being around the guys. You mentioned Ron Paulus. I've sat in on one of your 4 for 40 speeches that Ron Paulus helped organize with the team a couple of years ago. Obviously, you're very attached and involved with your alma mater. When you're around, though, like in season, are guys coming up to you? Are you wearing that ring? Do they recognize you? Like, how do you straddle the line between like giving advice and not want to step on the toes of the guys who are getting paid to do that right now?
Well, I learned from Aaron Taylor, who's been my mentor for the longest time. And he said, I'm like a library. Come get a book when you want it. You know, I mean, I'm here. I've got the knowledge. I think it's an interesting dynamic in college. You know, you assume you're going to have the greatest career ever, right? And that's a good belief to have. What's been fun for me is a lot of guys who, you know, in college, nice to meet you, nice to see you. And they'll come back, Ryan, man, what do I do with my money? What do I think about this? Like, here's what I'm looking at. I mean, they realize once you go to the NFL, you realize that a 10-year NFL career is a lot different than it sounded when you were in college, you know, balling and in the top 25 for 70-plus weeks in a row, right? So what I love is just giving guys space to be themselves, let their personality develop and build. And I've got a couple of great relationships with players on the team. And then, you know, and often it builds even more after they leave Notre Dame because I'm an impartial person to give them advice. I mean, saying something like, Yeah, I had a mental performance coach for all 10 years in the NFL. You need somebody to help you understand performance anxiety, to understand what to focus on, to understand that sometimes you're going to have a bad coach, you know what I mean? And how do you handle that? How do you improve as a player with a bad coach? So I've been through just about every situation, including surgeries that you could have as a football player. And it's fun for me to be a resource for my brothers and sisters who have come through Notre Dame and are looking at their next chapter in life, whether that's professional sports or not.
One of your passions is financial literacy for professional athletes. And I've never really asked you like why that really clicked with you, but like what sort of drove you to throw yourself into that and to try to educate people about it?
Well, I blew my first $1 million. I made my first $1 million. I was in debt after my first season. So I had to learn about this guy, Warren Buffet. And I was like, I like buffets. That's pretty cool. He likes Coca-Cola. I like Coca-Cola too. Oh, it's Warren Buffett. Okay. And, you know, even though one of my degrees is in economics and policy from Notre Dame, I didn't comprehend owning stock. I didn't understand, you know, saving money, and I didn't understand how to say no. And I also didn't understand I'm not responsible for other people's problems, right? I lost friendships because, well, I wouldn't pay one person's bankruptcy. That's not my problem. You went bankrupt as an adult. I'm 22 years old. I'm not handling that. And then I had a teammate take his own life when I was with the Denver Broncos because he was over $250,000 in debt, had back-to-back injuries, and it was looking like the end of his career. I've gotten the phone calls to buy back backpacks and cars and jewelry, things that guys spent when times were good, and now they need money for food for their kids. So I've been a part of some very tough conversations, preventable conversations, and it's something that I really want to serve, you know, people who are in my community and really beyond to think about these things and to know that you can invest even, you know, $10 a month, and that $100 invested before 25 is $30,000 when you're 65, and you can only drive one car at the same time, right? So buy one car. And these are things that, you know, it's very hard behaviorally when we get money not to spend it. So I want to continue to pass that message, encourage people to invest and think about long-term wealth over getting rich quickly.
My wife is a financial advisor, so maybe you two can have a podcast separately on this topic afterward.
Own what you buy. If you're going to Target in some Nike shoes and stopping at Starbucks, own those stocks.
This is a nice segue because our friend Tom Mendoza tweeted a photo before the game the other night wearing a Kyle Hamilton branded hat, which if the founder or the benefactor of your business school is wearing your merch, you know you're doing something right. Unfortunately, Kyle Hamilton's not playing this week. Don't know when he'll return, if at all. Ryan, how do you think the secondary gets by against this Carolina offense without their backbone?
Well, I really like DJ Brown. I think he's developed tremendously. You're going to need a lot from Houston Griffith as well moving forward. But the big question is, if you're Kyle Hamilton, you need to have a conversation with your family. Do I come back for the last 2-3 games of this season in a bowl game? I mean, you know, Jalen Smith says hello, right? I mean, you got to start having these conversations saying, I love Notre Dame, and I'm going to be a top 15 pick in the NFL draft. What's important here? So it's going to be it's a great opportunity for Notre Dame to get better without Kyle Hamilton, because that's what the future looks like, right? You're not going to have Kyle Hamilton next year. So get the guys who are going to have to, you're going to have to depend on, and get him in there early. And I think DJ Brown's a big piece of that. I like Isaiah Pryor in some of that kind of robber linebacker situation. And we'll see what other player wants to step up. And that's, I cannot commend Coach Kelly enough for the depth that he has built on this football team. You got JD Bertrand, a guy who hasn't started his whole career, you know, in the top 20 in the college football in tackles. So guys like that, a guy like Bo Bauer, who kind of hadn't found his spot yet, all of a sudden producing. I mean, they've got the depth to succeed, and it's time for that to show up.
All right, fantastic. Ryan, thanks for making some time for us here on Wednesday morning. We appreciate you as always. And we'll see you on Saturday out here for Notre Dame, North Carolina.
Sounds good. Go Irish.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
That was Ryan Harris. We thank him for his time. Pete, you never know what direction the conversations are going to go with him, whether it's talking about our chemistry on this podcast. His post-playing career is kind of I don't want to say know-it-all, but a great resource for athletes and financial management. What was your biggest takeaway from that conversation?
That I played guard next to him and also made a tackle as a Purdue linebacker. but both those, I would feel great about myself right now. I think that his explanation for the offensive line, you sort of hear the it takes three games, it takes four games, so on and so forth. Like, I think he felt like the line's improvement was a little bit more inevitable than I did, or I think you did. But, I think that's part of it, because it's like in some ways you're building this chemistry over time. Well, that doesn't necessarily explain why the Alt-Christofic combination, which has been together for all of about six quarters, is when the line took off. But I do think his explanation of Jarrett Patterson and like letting other players fail was kind of fascinating, because I think that was a trap that Patterson had been falling into for the better part of four and a half games.
No, absolutely. I thought that was insightful. I thought, we've all thought it if we haven't exactly said it, but the minute Kyle Hamilton went down the other night, I mean, that thought crosses all of our minds. Like, I don't know anyone's personal motivation, so I don't want to speak for anyone, but like from the outside looking in, you do wonder, why would you suit up in college again if you're Kyle Hamilton? Now, if he's 100% healthy next week, great. Like, nothing to really think about or worry about in that regard. But we both know Brian Kelly. We both know the way he speaks and addresses injuries. If he's going to rule someone out on a Monday, to me, that's pretty telling. Like a guy could have an amputated leg and he's going to say, we'll go day by day. He's in protocol. We'll see how he is Saturday. That's just the way Brian Kelly speaks. For him to rule out a guy Monday with an injury that we're still like not entirely familiar with, fat pad or whatever it was, that to me is pretty telling. So I think Kyle Hamilton has a decision to make on his hands. You addressed it in your mailbag, and Ryan Harris addressed it here in depth pretty much. And I do want to say, like, I was at a Ron Palas, who we mentioned, organizes 4 for 40 dinners every spring for the current rosters. And he has notable players who have had successful post-playing careers come in and speak. And they're very insightful. Like, I think every program should do something like this if they're not already. And a lot of successful guys came up and spoke. And they're all great. But like Ryan Harris gets up there with like the pop star mic, the TEDx mic. And it's just a different speed, a different level. And he's got a glistening Super Bowl ring shining off his fingers while he speaks that is capturing all these guys' attention. Like, to see that, the way that guy commands a room with guys who aren't that much younger than him and who are in the same position he was not that long ago. And even just us now, to hear like some of the trials he had to go through as an NFL player, I was unfamiliar with a lot of that. And that's the stuff that I think is easy to overlook, because you see a guy with a degree from Notre Dame and a Super Bowl ring. What could possibly, be missing in his life? Like, holy cow. Like,
yeah.
It takes a lot to get there.
That surprised me. And I mean, definitely is get your mind racing for a story down the road with him on it. But like Ryan Harris was one of those guys. I covered his career. I'm old enough to have done that. But he was, I mean, we all have encountered players like this where you talk to them and you're just like, damn, you are just a really impressive person. Like, if football was taken away from you, I would have no worries that you would start a company or work for a law firm or be a doctor. And Ryan was one of those guys. So the fact that he had that financial hardship after his first year in the pros, I think is kind of fascinating, because he'd be one of the guys that would be like, I would have no concern that would ever happen for him. But I think that's just sort of how real that part of it is. And I think it's a great resource for Notre Dame, because, like, I mean, like you said, his personality is so engaging, and he's just easy to get along with. And if you have a Super Bowl ring and you're getting invited to Peyton Manning's Hall of Fame stuff, like, there's a certain credibility that goes with that, even if you're not on the Manning cast on Monday night. I will be interested. I think he's probably more optimistic than me about the secondary moving forward without Kyle Hamilton, however long that is. And I don't think it takes much reading between the lines to know that it's going to be, that's a matter of weeks, not a matter of days for him to come back, assuming he comes back. Look, DJ Brown, full credit to him last weekend against USC. I did a sort of a quick statistical analysis there. And, like, when they went to six DBs, Keaton Slovis was 1 of 7 for 11 yards and a pick. However, when they were just playing nickel, Slovis was 25 of 29 for 276. Still no touchdowns in that realm. So it's, you know, can Marcus Freeman sort of stick with this bend but don't break, because Kyle Hamilton was the ultimate person that could break you. I'm fascinated to see what that looks like against Sam Howell.
Yeah, I mean, you had to do that last week. You were reconfiguring things on the fly, and you're playing probably the best wide receiver in the country who still got his. Like, Drake London was so freaking good. This Carolina offense at its best can be very, very lethal, but they don't have the weapons. They don't have a weapon like Drake London, because no one has a weapon like Drake London, but they don't have the weapons that they had last year. They had two, I think, 1,000-yard backs last year. They had two really dynamic wide receivers, and this year they don't. They still have Sam Howell. They have a good ground game. They're averaging 199 on the ground per game, which is strong, but it's also fifth in the ACC. It's nothing to write home about. So they're going to make you defend the whole field. I'm curious to see how Notre Dame is in a full game without Kyle Hamilton, how Phil Longo, North Carolina's OC, prepares for this defense without Kyle Hamilton. And, you know, at the end of the day, this game's going to come down to which North Carolina team shows up, because it's been a different version every single week. It's been a version that puts up 59 on Virginia, whose offense has been even more dynamic than North Carolina's this year. And it's been a version that loses at home to Florida State and on the road to a Virginia Tech team that might not have its head coach a couple weeks from now. So, it's been a very, very tough team to get a sense on. You know, we've heard Mack Brown kind of say, well, you guys overrated us. I mean, he's not wrong, but I think, again, his personality has a lot to do with that. But you look at the ACC rankings of pretty much every significant category for this North Carolina team. They're fourth or fifth in everything offensively except yards per play. They're second, 6.76. And they're sixth or worse in everything defensively. Like, they are thoroughly mediocre. Which is why I believe they're a 500 football team coming into this game. Like, it's just a team that you just don't know what you're going to get out of week to week. Maybe the bye week helps them, maybe it doesn't. But I will say last year's Carolina team was more dynamic offensively than this year's was. And that last year's North Carolina Notre Dame game, to me, was the most impressive Notre Dame showing of the season. I'm not saying it was a bigger win than the first Clemson one, but the way they withstood those first two punches from Carolina in the first quarter and completely render that offense irrelevant. The way they just beat the crap out of them physically was so darn impressive. You just remember seeing Sam Howell post-game. Like, Carolina had not lost a game by more than one possession under Mack Brown in 2 years, and Notre Dame came in there and won, I think, by 14. Felt like much more. They just completely seized control of the game, and they just took it to them. Now, completely different Notre Dame team this year than last year, so I hate to draw a through line between that one and this one, but I do think they faced much better and more dynamic and tougher North Carolina teams than the one they will face this Saturday night. And that has to count for something in the confidence department.
And especially without Kyle Hamilton.
Yes.
Because they played the entire second half without him in North Carolina last year.
So that's right. Yeah.
That is significant. I feel like the matchup on Saturday, like, you know, we talk about Sam Howell and Longo's offense, which is exciting to watch. But North Carolina's offensive line is still really bad. You know, if you think you've had a hard time watching Notre Dame's offensive line, North Carolina would like a word with you. I mean, they are atrocious protecting the quarterback. Like you said, they don't have the dynamic playmakers at running back anymore like they did last year, even though both those guys really got shut down. And I think Notre Dame's defensive line has gotten better and better and better. I mean, just for the sake of comparison, North Carolina has allowed 27 sacks this season. Teams that have played seven games, the only ones worse are UNLV and Southern Miss. Notre Dame is not great. I don't want to like overstate where Notre Dame's offensive line in terms of, is in terms of protecting the quarterback, but they're at least trending in a good direction, right? Like the last two games, Notre Dame has figured out how to protect the quarterback, whereas I don't think North Carolina has come to any sort of whiz-bang conclusion. So with the way Foskey and MTA are playing, you know, Jason Adebalola, I mean, they have multiple NFL guys on the offensive line right now, including Foskey, who said on Tuesday night that he'll petition for feedback for the NFL Draft Advisory Committee. And rightfully
yeah,
so.
Why wouldn't he?
I always felt like a good year for him was he had a tough decision to make at the end of the year, and he might be having better than a good year. He might not have a tough decision to make after the year. Just it wasn't the one that I thought was going to happen before, when the season started. So I like Notre Dame on Saturday night here on the strength of Notre Dame's defensive line versus North Carolina's offensive line. So it's like from a prediction standpoint, you're right. North Carolina's kind of they're a bit of a grenade that you're tossing around. You don't know if it's going to go off or not. So I think even without Kyle Hamilton, I like Notre Dame kind of in the 34-24 range. So that's I'll stick with that for Saturday.
We're on the same wavelength. I got 31-21. The line's 3.5, so Notre Dame would cover. Over under 62.5, which I get, but is also high, especially for a night game. The one thing with North Carolina that, you know, may get overlooked, they've only played two road games. You know how they've done in those two road games, Pete? Lost 17-10 at Virginia Tech, lost 45-22 at Georgia Tech. Like, they have not played well away from home at all. And they're starting now as tough of a stretch as you can imagine for an ACC team right now. Back-to-back non-conference.
I can barely imagine a tough stretch for an ACC team.
Well, listen to this. Their next two games are non-conference games at Notre Dame and at home against Wake Forest, non-conference. They scheduled this years ago.
Yes.
Wake is undefeated, and they got to go from Wake to Pittsburgh on Thursday night. Wake and Pitt are easily the two best teams in the ACC so far, so that could change. So this is a tough stretch for Carolina. I do like Notre Dame, even without Kyle Hamilton. This is not a team, Carolina, this is just not a team I trust. If you're a betting man and you've bet on Carolina this year, like, I feel bad for you because it's just like, you just can't, that's not a team I would trust my money at all. I'm surprised the over-under is as high as it is. The two longest tenured head coaches of the FBS, by the way, Mack Brown and Brian Kelly, which is crazy because Brown's got, what, 12 years on him?
And it's interesting to hear Brian Kelly talk about how they first kind of met when Kelly was at Grand Valley and Mack was at Texas. And I believe it was like kind of a coaching clinic or something in the state of Texas. And Kelly went to Austin to just sort of like see how it all the pieces fit together there. Because I wasn't really sure that they had any meeting or like any kind of relationship. And I don't know if they're great friends or anything, but they've at least crossed paths in a professional sense at some point.
Everyone's great friends with Mack Brown, Pete. Everyone.
How could you not be?
Exactly. That's why his team was a preseason number 10 team or whatever it was. Also, their pass did cross in 09 because if Mack Brown doesn't hold his finger up with 1 second and get that second left, who knows? Maybe Cincinnati under Brian Kelly or an interim coach goes to the BCS title game against Alabama last year. But that's a nice alternative history that we've
got. You're bringing up the possibility of Jeff Quinn coaching in a BCS national championship game right there as Cincinnati
against Nick Saban.
That would that would be something. So
that would be something. I don't know if we can get any more wacky than we just got right there.
No.
What one more?
It's up there with me making a tackle as a Purdue linebacker.
To put a finer point on it, one other thing I want to mention about Ryan Harris. We thank again for joining. Did not know this, but not surprised at all to hear him say that Aaron Taylor was one of his biggest mentors. I see a lot of similarities between those two guys. Two guys who obviously have had successful pro careers, successful media careers, successful Notre Dame careers on the offensive line. And two guys who, as you mentioned with Ryan, if football got taken away from them, you would think, all right, no problem. These guys can do whatever they want. And yet we've heard Aaron Taylor, even in the last week, I think he did a roundtable on CBS, be very open and vulnerable about some of the mental health struggles he has had. So, I mean, it's just really enlightening and educational to hear these two guys speak anytime they're in front of a mic. Hopefully we get Aaron back on the pod as well, because despite this not being the glory days of Notre Dame's offensive line, those guys are the best talkers when they're in the program, and they're the best podcast guests when they're out of the program.
100%. All right, we'll wrap it up there on this episode of the Shamrock. Matt and I will be back on Sunday morning, I guess, to record a post-game North Carolina.
I'll be trick-or-treating. Maybe you can catch me.
You'll be trick-or-treating in Chicago. I'll try to get back into that Friends of the University booth, and I might actually crack open one of the beers this time. So until very late Saturday night or early Sunday morning, I'm Pete Sampson. He's Matt Fortuna. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.